Hey, this is your Escape from Plan A episode for this week. So I sat down with Mike and Steve, and we just shot the shit for like 3 hours about various topics, and it's a little bit too long to release as a single pod. So I'm going to cut this right into the part where we start talking about real estate and, mortgage rates and things like that, because I think it's kind of timely, might be interesting. So here we go.
Dude, I get this feeling that 2023 is going to be it. 2023 will be a relatively boring, flat year in terms of 2023 is like the calm, and I think 2024 will be the storm. I get the feeling like next year is going to be
It's going
pretty
to be a
crazy.
shit show. I think so. I think it's going to be a
Yeah,
complete shit show.
I think we're going to finally have some of the economic reckonings that we've been talking about hit. And we're gonna have like a political fucking shit show because of the election, and just a lot of things are the a lot of pressure is building up, and I think it's gonna blow next year.
Yeah, I think this recession that everyone keeps talking about is, I mean, it's got to happen at some point, right? And next year is probably it's setting up to be a pretty epic blowout because I
Yeah.
think a lot of people are just going to run out of money
Yeah,
and
that's the problem.
it's going to be
pretty bad.
election. It's going to be election relevant, right?
It'll
So
be election relevant,
though, and
and
I think the way that the housing market is shaping up is going to be a real fucking problem
what are
for
your
not
what are
just
your
next
what are
year.
your thoughts on the housing market? Big
I
picture.
mean, dude, the mortgage rates are just too
They're
high.
so fucking high, they keep going
They're too
higher.
high for the price level that houses are currently
There's
at
no buyers.
there's no buyers. I couldn't afford my fucking place,
Yeah.
you know? Like
At
at my
7.2% or whatever.
Yeah, no fucking way. Like,
Yeah.
dude, when I bought my place, interest rates were 4.5, and I was like, wow, that's, like
Hi.
yeah, like I'm just barely skating by here. Seven and on a 30-year on a third I mean the yeah it would be like double the fucking payment. So it's like, it's crazy, and so many people are getting locked out of the housing market because, there's still enough people keeping the thing alive with cash purchases that prices are not coming down,
Steve, from
and
an
the
economic perspective, like, is inflation that huge a threat that they have to, they're gonna, imagine this. The American financial, like, elite, the plant, the at the Fed or whatever, are willing to destroy America's favorite pastime, which is real estate. This is more American than fucking baseball and a bald eagle, baked into a fucking pie, right? Like, they are willing to totally destroy the American real estate market out of fear of inflation. Is that fear founded? Like, is it? Because I think a lot of people are like, dude, what are you doing? Like, you got to lower the rates. You're going to kill the economy. You're going to kill the housing market. And why? Because you're afraid that peaches are going to be 3% more expensive. Do you know what I mean? No, I'm not trying to downplay inflation. I'm just saying, like, I feel like they're. I'm phrasing this in a in from the perspective of someone who'd be like, why would you do all this? Why would you destroy all of this just to tame inflation that's already going down to like 3 point plus, 3+%? What's the big deal? Drop rates.
Yeah, I guess like this is, I mean, central banks still operate on some degree of economic orthodoxy, right? I kind of agree with you that at least for your median American consumer right now, a 3% or 3.5% inflation world is probably, all things considered, better, at least in the near term. I mean, near term is in, like, call it next 5, 10 years, than a 2% inflation world. But that would be sort of like non-orthodox, uncharted territory for the Fed. And that's probably something that they don't necessarily want to countenance. They still, like, for the Fed to accept, because their official inflation target is 2, right? And what we have seen over the last year plus is that the Fed remains extremely credible in its inflation targeting regime. That's why long-term inflation expectations really haven't gone, too far out of control. That's why the dollar is strong, et cetera. For the Fed to change that would be a dramatic shock, and we would be into not completely uncharted territory, but you kind of say, okay,
dramatic now, shock. Now what about 7.2% mortgage rates? That's a dramatic shock to the system.
That is a dramatic.
What about all
shock,
the fucking? What about the empty fucking buildings that office buildings that are going to get CRE, turned into?
Right.
Well, look, man, these guys are just going to. They don't securitize these fucking commercial loans, right? These guys are just going to fucking hand the keys over to the banks.
They're just all defaulting.
Yeah. They'll just be like, yo, it's fucking your problem now.
Yes.
What are they going to do?
That's all fair. But a bigger shock would be some questioning about the ability of the dollar to hold its value and the Fed's commitment to that.
Okay. So what you're saying is that we're dealing with forces well beyond the usual scale of imagination that the dollar is actually.
So this is
threat.
Like. This is like, well, you actually have to deflate the value of certain assets so much that the dollar's supremacy is never questioned.
Yeah, kind of, right? Because like,
there's basically too many fucking dollars out there. Is that the problem?
I mean, the U.S. consumer.
There's just too much debt. This is like a debt problem.
There's total a lot of government debt. There's a lot of government debt. The reason
there's a lot
why...
of total debt too, isn't there?
Right.
There's a lot of consumer debt. There's a lot of corporate debt. There's a lot of everything.
The composition has shifted compared to 08, largely towards the government. The U.S. consumer came out of COVID with a better financial situation in aggregate than they went in. And the reason for that is twofold. Well, it's kind of related, but let's say twofold. One is the government just printed a lot of money. It just straight up gave a lot of money to people, right? And number two, the housing market boom that was spawned coming out of COVID put a lot of housing equity into people's hands, right? And then
they turn on the credit spigots too.
And then
it was easy to get a car loan. It was easy to get a house loan.
That's right. Think about how easy it was to refi shit in 2020 and 2021.
Yeah, you get a fucking HELOC because the appraised value of your house went through the roof.
Exactly.
So you had all this equity to tap in the form of debt.
Yeah. So then and then like wage growth, especially at the bottom end of the wage scale, has been pretty strong. So all of that is like, where's that money coming from? Largely, it's coming from the government. Who funds that? Foreign buyers of treasuries. Foreign buyers of treasuries. This is the only.
It's also
really
coming
possible.
From. It's also just coming from the banks in the form of credit creation.
It is.
Where does a mortgage come from? Where does a car loan come from? Not from the government, from the bank.
Sure. Yeah, but I mean, I think mortgage origination is actually not that high, just owing to rates right now, right? A lot of the juice came straight from government transfers, and that is a function of the U.S. But how does a few thousand dollars
affect the entire course of the U.S. dollar?
Americans love to spend, baby.
Yeah, no, but dude, two PlayStations in and you're tapped out. I mean, it wasn't that much money, was it?
Well, in aggregate, it was
it the business loans? Was it the loans?
There were a lot of PPP loans and a lot of home
HELOC
loans.
Shit, right.
Well, yeah. HELOC is credit. HELOC is
credit.
Debt. I'm talking about
wage growth. Wage growth
helicopter
has been strong
money.
Too, right? Wage growth has been strong, especially at the lower end of the spectrum,
the problem, right? People are making too much money.
It's all of these things, right?
Subway stuff costs like $12 or whatever the fuck, right?
It was also unemployment, like regular unemployment got extended and expanded. Mm-hmm. It was all of
and
these
then
things.
Credits, and then debt suspension, right? Like
And debt suspension.
Yeah.
Like we just listed eight things.
Yeah. Even something like there was that window for people to refi down into 1.5% 30-year fixed or whatever.
I'm just saying it wasn't the check. It wasn't just the check.
It wasn't just the check, but it was all
it was the way
that
they suspended debts, that they greased the reels on more credit.
The way that I think about it is those checks were priming the pump to the real money flood,
which is the credit,
which came in the form of PPP loans, which got erased.
Yeah. So those turned into fucking grants.
Yeah. And then the corporate credit, like corporate credit expanded and home credit expanded and fucking refi credit expanded and auto loans, consumer debt expanded.
Yeah. State unemployment was federally backed for
backstopped. Yeah.
Uncle Sam stepped in,
stepped in big
like
time.
Trillions of dollars were spent.
And that's another reason why higher interest rates aren't necessarily putting as large of a damper in the economy. It's because if the government can sustain those higher interest rate payments much more easily than an individual or a business can, right?
Yeah, and most of the debt people are carrying, you know,
yeah, low rate mortgage
corporates are carrying is lower rate is lower fixed rates. Mm-hmm. And there's also, I heard today that there's this theory that higher fucking, because nobody's taking on new debt, or they're only taking non-new debt at the margins to refi a tiny amount of their old lower rate debt, that higher interest rates are actually stimulative to the economy because the fucking Fed is paying out money.
Yeah,
because
the government pays it out.
Yeah, the government pays out interest payments to basically everyone in the form of savings accounts and money market accounts and fucking all that stuff and bond coupons and all everything.
Okay, so there's clearly a problem, and the problem is that there's just too much fucking money and debt out there.
Yeah.
And so they've got to close the window on debt. Is that it?
Yeah, and they're trying to with this higher interest rate thing, but the problem is, I think what I heard today, some very smart people were talking about it, is there's actually a short-term stimulus effect from the higher rates that has to get worked through.
You mean in the form of like people earning interest on their deposits?
Earning interest on cash and cash-like stuff.
Yeah, there's a bit of that.
That has to get worked through before they roll over and refinance all of their lower rate debt into the higher rate regime. And that's what's causing this fucking ridiculous lag that everyone's been talking about for like
seemingly 2 years. You've lost me a little bit. What's the stimulative effect? Because I've bought a lot of short-term bonds, but that means my cash is tied up. I can't spend that money for a year.
Well, were you going to spend that money anyways? Probably not. No. Now you're getting an income on it.
Yeah.
And
right, but I can't spend that until next
year. But in your mind, you're making money,
right?
Like,
right? I feel like I've locked in that money already.
Yeah,
you feel richer, right? Okay. So have you like dramatically pulled back on your spending?
No, I've actually, you know what? I've actually,
or maybe you have.
I think I've increased my spending significantly.
Right.
Over my usual.
Because you're like, I just bought a shitload of T-bills at 5%.
And these T-bills are giving me 5%.
You know what was interesting? Someone said this on Twitter. They were like, if you put 200,000 or something like that into short-term T's, you know, you're getting like 1,100 or something a month.
Yeah. I have my shit in a money market account.
I'm like, if you did five times that, $1 million,
$1 million,
you would get $5,500 a month. I'm like, that is rental income on a $1 million condo easily.
Yeah.
So at 5.x%, the government bonds are giving you a return on capital, return on investment, par with real estate.
Yeah, rental 5% cap rate.
and what is
it's tax advantaged.
And it's tax advantaged. And so what is all these side hustle fucking things are all about real estate. Right? Every time you see something online or something about side hustle, it's about rental properties. But if the government is going to pay you a return on capital roughly in the ballpark of rentals, like what does that do to Airbnb?
It's different because there's no leverage involved, right? Like usually the real estate game involves
right, but the thing
borrowing.
Is true, but that only makes sense if you're seeing significant capital appreciation, right? To offset the interest.
Well, at least
it depends on what your local market can support in terms of short-term rentals.
But what place is getting
let's say 5.x%.
Like if your mortgage rate is 7, where are you getting 7 rental yields? Like what
exactly
is this?
Exactly.
Yeah. Probably not.
Yeah.
But I mean, these are new rates. So
yeah.
I mean, people finance stuff from before. So it's not like it's going to replace it all overnight.
It's going to take some time.
Right? It's going
to
take time.
It just seems to me that as a first pass, that these short term rates of 5%+, because they bring you close into the realm of real estate returns, that it's got to be I am much less interested in the idea of passive rental income.
Of course.
If I can earn something roughly similar through government bonds,
yeah.
I mean, there's no downside.
It's not that passive. It's a job.
It's a job. Exactly. Like my government bonds are not going to leak during a rainstorm and they're not going to catch fire.
And they're probably not going to miss their monthly.
No, and I don't have to let some weirdo hold it for a year. Sorry. That's anti-rent. I'm just saying, you know, like I don't have to like a stranger. I didn't mean weirdo. I don't have to let a stranger hold my bonds for a year And that, and I have to get calls from this person about how the bond's disappointing.
So if right. you think of, like, to go back to your original question, right? Like, if you think about it, higher interest rates are supposed to slow down spending because they're supposed to affect businesses and individuals who are debtors. But in this case, the main debtor is the government. And the government doesn't care. Or at least they don't care yet. They don't care as much. They don't care in the same way, and they don't care right now.
Yeah, they care in the sense that they can't let the system crash. That's but right. They don't care. But
right now, I mean, the dollar is very strong. U.S. economy is still going. Yeah, interest payments are higher, and the government's running a massive deficit, but so far, so good. That's a privilege. What is that? Like
that's called 2023. Privilege. You see what I'm saying? 2024 will be a different conversation.
We'll see. Well, this is why the Fed cannot, I think the Fed cannot countenance, even if Jerome Powell in his heart of hearts thinks that he can live with a 3% inflation rate, I think he can. He can never say that.
I don't understand. I just don't understand the Federal Reserve perspective. It's too macro. It's too big. Like, they're dealing with forces that I don't understand. All I know is that Mike's point about 7.2% killing the real estate market, it looks like we're going to go to 8 by next year. Like, this thing's not coming down, man. That long bond keeps going up. Right? I think
the yield.
Yeah, the yield on the, exactly. The yield on the long bond is, you know, going, it's only going up, man. I don't think that curve is going to reinvert because the short term goes down significantly. I think the long end of the curve is just going to move up.
Because the back end moves higher.
Yeah, it's called a bearish steepener, right? When the long end goes up.
Yeah.
I mean,
because they're saying we're not moving the short term rate. We're holding it here. We're going to wait till that long bond goes up and we have a normal yield curve. And at that point, you're going to have 8%+ mortgages.
Yeah. And I think what they'll probably do at some point is come up with like specific targeted programs to help home, like either you help first-time home buyers, or you do something like, you know, you can move but you take your mortgage with you and you take your
mobile mortgages.
That's going to crush bank earnings, but you know, hey, whatever, right?
It's fascinating.
Bank earnings are already getting crushed by the inverted curve because they can't make any fucking money.
This will crush them even more.
It's just so fascinating to me because in the past, the policy decision here is absolutely so simple. Drop fucking rates. That, you know, like as long as I've been alive, it's like
the problem
you get
has
this problem,
been,
you drop problem, rates.
You cut rates. Aliens invading, cut interest rates.
Yeah, cut interest rates. Yeah.
Pandemic, cut interest rates.
Fukushima, volcano, nuclear water rating, cut interest rates. But like... But now it's like, dude, I cannot believe it. They are going to kill the American real estate dream machine. Do you see what I'm saying? Like, do they understand how?
Like, are prices actually down?
Yeah, they're down.
Suffering.
But yeah, okay, they're down in certain markets.
They're down in certain markets from the high.
I think the national median is down. Suffering. LA, LA is a fucking weirdo place. I don't know about LA, but. I would say my friends in LA have said that the real estate market, the activity is way down. So prices may not have fallen, but there's no market. So
yeah. And people are
because everyone's locked into their low.
Yeah.
Like I'm locked in. I can't move anywhere. In order for me to move, I would have to like
sustainable
way downsize.
That's a sustainable situation.
It is not, dude. Americans love moving, man. If we're not flipping houses and changing lives, there's nothing to life.
So you guys are
you
guys
kidding
are
me?
This, like, look, I'm from Toronto.
Do they understand the cultural consequences of this? What do you, dude? Canadians are even more real estate retarded than we are.
That's what I mean.
Wait, so how is Canada's real estate market reacting to crazy rates?
I mean, prices are off.
On a shorter cycle, right?
We are definitely on. Yeah. So,
5-year resets
you can lock,
or something.
The longest you can lock for is 5.
Yeah.
Maybe there's some niche cases where you can do 7, but it's pretty stringent in that way. But also here,
they print fake loonies or whatever.
Yeah, we print fake.
They don't have the good dollar dies.
We have monopoly money.
Yeah,
that's why so many cuts.
That's good. The best thing you can do is 5 years.
the thing here is like people are just gonna have to suck it up because if you default on your mortgage, they chase you to the ends of the fucking earth. Like,
oh, it's like,
what do you mean? It's recourse?
It's not like in the US where you can just be like, oh,
yeah, no, this is recourse.
Just kidding.
You have recourse loans? Bro, we just hand off the keys and be like,
yeah, see? That's America. That's America.
God bless America. God damn it.
So what's going to happen? God damn. Like, people, like, you would have to be in really dire straits to default on your mortgage here, right? So, like, consumer spending will just get crushed. But I think what you're seeing.
And despite all that, you have some of the bubbliest fucking real estate markets
right,
on earth.
Because, look, the Canadian population grew by 3.5% or 4% last year, Canada-wide.
That's pretty large.
That's large. And almost all of that immigration comes to, like, two cities. So, yeah. From, like,
so like
Toronto
the big cities
are, it's, like, 10% probably.
Yeah, so it's concentrated in places exactly. where that they can't afford that many new people.
Exactly. So, and the pace of home construction is not that high. That hasn't really changed. So I think you basically just have a very unhealthy situation where nobody can afford shit, but you have no choice. So I think there are, this is somewhat anecdotal, but I think there are more and more situations where you will have like a 4-bedroom suburban house that's like a single family house, but there'll be like 12 people living in it. There's a lot of that kind of situation now, I think.
Wow. Okay.
So
that's how my neighborhood is, man.
This is not an open house situation. Like, this is the difference between prices are going to be. I think prices will probably be fine, but that is not to say that this is a healthy situation.
Dude, if you came to my neighborhood, first of all, you would realize I live in a pretty poor part of town, right? Not like the poorest by far, but it's a heavily immigrant, poor Asian Latino area, right? Mm. But the houses here, I mean, I'm talking like a real shitbox, like nothing you would want to touch.
Yeah.
1.4, 1.5 million, you know? Mm. I'm like, who is paying 1.4, 1.5 million to live in a shitbox in this neighborhood? Honestly. Mm. I mean, I'm being realistic here. Like, that's a lot of money. There's a lot of other neighborhoods you can move into for 1.4, 1.5. And so there was an open house across the street. Nice. It's a 3-level, 4-level house, right?
Yeah.
Nice. It's, you know, I go in.
These are like townhomes?
They're single family homes, but they are they're townhomish in narrowness,
like a row house.
Right? Yeah, they're row houses.
Okay.
But with a back, it has a backyard, it has a driveway and a garage and all that. And it was listing for like, you know, 1.5 or something like that. And I go inside and there's like 20 people living in this house. The basement alone, there's a family of like 7 living in the basement.
Whoa.
Each bedroom is basically an apartment. And the kitchen is shared, right? It's a shared house. I realized,
this is what's
the 1.5 is you're buying like 20 tenants.
Yes. Yes.
That's what you're buying.
This is how the math is working out, right?
Yep. And they, you know, it's very like, you know, the open house, they're kind of checking you out when you show up, you know, like you're an Asian guy. Okay, you can come on in. I'll show you what's going on in here. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Like that nice white couple looking for like the first, you know, for their first, you know, $1.6 million starter home. They're not going there.
Yeah.
Right?
For sure.
So it's, you know, and then so I walked in and I'm like, oh, dude, this is a whole other fucking world, dude.
So what you're saying is it's a multifamily disguised as a single family. Oh,
absolutely. That's exactly what's going on. Yeah. Yep.
That makes sense.
Yeah. But
I mean, that's how it's always worked in New York City, right? I mean, the history of the city.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's barely disguised. And I think that the city knows it. And they're just like, look, if we crack down on this, all we're going to do is create a giant housing crisis.
Homeless problem, yeah.
Yes. So we better just shut up.
Piss
off the wrong people politically and create a fucking humanitarian crisis in the city. Because now, they're not allowed to live in this house because it's too many people in one house. But then what are you going to do? You're going to have to find them shelter. Otherwise, they're just going to fucking sleep in City Hall. You know what I mean? Like, you just have more homeless.
Yeah, that's always, I mean, that's not, LA doesn't have a history of that like New York City does as a city. But I mean, I think it's more common out here for like struggling younger people to like team up and get houses, because there's a large housing stock of single family residences in LA, but very few historically very few families have like
I heard like in San Gabriel Valley it's pretty common for a lot of like of the poor, you know, restaurant workers and things like that.
They'll team up
and they have group houses and there's like loads of people in there.
Yeah, it's very well hidden though. Like, you can't really, that's not something you can tell just by looking at the outside of a house.
Yeah.
You can't tell from like the number of cars parked in the driveway?
No, a lot of them ride bikes and stuff, man. Mm-hmm. Or use public transit.
Have electric, they have those little electric vehicles now too. Like the electric scooters.
Yeah, public transit in LA is actually, it just takes a while, but it's actually pretty good. Okay. If you have to take it, you can survive on it.
Okay.
It's just anyone with like money doesn't want to take it.
I think the e-bike shit was a game changer. You go across town on those.
Especially with good weather.
In LA, all sorts of people.
An e-bike, man, dude, you're cruising. You're not really putting much effort. You're just cruising.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, I don't know. I started buying some TLT, which is 20 to 30 year bonds ETF. We'll see how that goes.
Oh, really? You're going to 20 to 30 year?
A little bit. I'm like averaging in.
You don't think that they're gonna keep rising the yields?
They might, but yeah. I looked at the historical chart, and going back to like the 80s, mm-hmm. the lowest level it's been is like $83 for TLT, one share of TLT. Mm-hmm. And right now it's at like 93. Mm. So if it drops, I don't think it'll go much lower than that.
TLT's going back
at the same time,
far?
It goes back to like 97 or something.
I have no appetite for long-term, because I feel like long-term yields are going to go up. I feel like they're...
You think it's just going to keep getting... Yeah, the bonds are just going to keep dropping.
I'm much more comfortable with the short-term, because I'm like, it's the difference between... It's SVB, man. Is it hold to maturity or is it available for sale? I'm like, dude, I'm only holding to maturity. I don't want to be exposed to market forces right now, because I don't understand what's going on. I'm just like...
Yeah.
I just want something straightforward. I'm going to earn 5% of my cash and that's it. Okay. Give it to me. That's it. I don't care about market value, whatever. Just give me the yield and then we'll rethink it come August next year. You know?
Yeah. The vast majority of my money is in money market. So I'm in the same.
Exactly.
I started nibbling at the long term
that I have is tips. So inflation.
I don't understand tips, man. Like, why do people buy tips? The yields always suck on those things.
That's because they're usually reporting the real yield. So it's whatever CPI is plus that.
Okay. I just don't understand tips well enough to buy them.
It's a little more esoteric, but like...
You've suggested that. Maybe I'll look into tips, but I don't fully understand them.
The longer dated ones, they're paying CPI plus two. So whatever inflation is plus two.
There was a thing called the I-bond that I bought.
But
you're capped. You can only buy 10,000 a year.
Because you're capped because those ones are like a simplified security.
I bought them at 9. They were yielding 9%.
Yeah.
Like, but you can only buy 10K.
Those ones are made, and they're designed to be like kind of more friendly for regular people.
They're giveaways. They're just total giveaways.
They're kind of like ridiculous. Yeah. There's some kind of nuancey math with like real tips. So that's why they have to cap those. Otherwise. That's the only thing anybody would ever buy.
Well, from what I understood, if you're a family of four, it really makes sense mm-hmm. to have I-bonds, because then you can buy 4x the limit.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And you can do it in your children's name and your fucking wife's name or husband's name or whatever. And so that makes more sense, obviously, because 10K is like, what the fuck am I going to do with 9% on 10K, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. 9% on 40K every year.
Yeah. That is every year. That is like real money.
That builds up quick.
So.
All right, buy bonds.
Buy bonds, but not every bond. Only buy the good ones.
Buy short term. That's my feeling. You're like a risk taker guy. I'm like, I'm a sidelines guy right now. I don't know what the fuck is happening next year. I'm like, just give me my short term bonds.
Take a little bit of risk. A little bit of risk on the margin. Never hurt anyone.
I feel like there's real risk in the bond market, man.
I mean, my trading goes up and down by fucking
not
a few percent every month. It doesn't really matter.
The thing with bonds is when they go, I feel like, look, Steve knows this. I don't know what I'm talking about, but I get my feeling is when this bond market starts going in a certain way, it just keeps going that way.
It's like a freight train.
Yeah. Whereas stocks are like all over the place. Like when yields start moving in one direction and you get like a real shift, you're going to get fucking creamed if you've got all your money. You know what I mean? Like,
That's
the fear. It's like
you can like lose half your money very quickly.
Yeah, and there's no, you can't wait for it to like one day blip the other way. It's not going to happen. Yeah. Like,
I know, it's a one way street.
Yeah. Like 30 year rates don't suddenly change, you know, it's a steady. Am I right, Steve?
I mean, if you look at the TNT chart, it basically went from like 140 down to 90.
Yeah.
Over like 2 years.
Yeah. I feel like stocks are chess, but fixed income is like go. You know.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny. Like I use E-Trade. If you look at a bond, like data sheet, or I don't know what it's called in the lingo, but. Dude, there's so many fucking things to know about a single bond.
Oh, yeah.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's crazy how much data there is on just one bond. And all it is you buy it on this date, you get X amount on another date, and you might get some coupons. That fundamentally, that's all it is. But there's so much that goes into the fucking trading and the math behind it. It's crazy.
And aren't you fixed income on the professional side, right? No, you're multi-asset. You do everything.
Multi-asset, but like I guess my background is probably FIC. So
see, FX, I feel like FX. FIC is, this is the return of like brains.
Interesting. Yes.
Yeah. The FIC has always attracted brains, right? Stock is a bunch of jocks.
There is no benefit to being smart in the equities world.
Stocks is a guy pushing webistics. Hey, I'm gonna put you in a webistics, right? It's fraud.
Jordan Belfort did not get rich slinging bonds.
This guy's getting high on Quaaludes, telling you to buy stocks. Shit over the phone.
Yeah, stocks is Teldar paper. Stocks. It's Blue Star Airlines. Okay, it's Blue Star fucking Airlines. But like, fixed income is like you can't defraud people. It's hard to defraud. I mean, I guess you could, but I'm saying like the real action.
It's hard to even explain what the fuck you're selling to people. Yeah. It's hard to sell a story on fixed income.
But this is good for you. You're a brain. You're not a boiler room guy. You're a conference room guy.
That's true.
I feel like now they have like fixed income has to be part of the mix for you know.
It's fixed income.
You can't YOLO stocks anymore and try to get, you know what I mean? Like you've got to have a really properly managed fixed income portfolio now. And there is now such a thing as an interest rate.
Yeah,
like interest rates exist now
than it's been for some time.
They basically made interest rates go away. They're like, yeah, we're going to live in a world with no interest rates.
They're back. Interest rates are back.
Yeah,
they're back.
And interest rate volatility is back.
They basically turned us into a superconducting medium for money, where there was no resistance. There was no interest rate resistance at all. And now we have resistance and friction coming back into the
thing. Uncle Sam just foots the bill.
And so many machines are poorly designed. They're going to come to a grinding halt, like America, like all of America is it's going to come to a fucking grinding halt next year.
I think the U.S. is going to be fine,
dude. We are. It's HGTV country over here, man. Okay,
you're always so bearish.
You don't understand.
On the US.
You don't have. It's all real estate, dude. Look, I'm going to throw a statistic at you. I don't know if it's true, but it's probably true. Did you know that 72% of Americans are realtors? They have their real estate license. I mean, it's crazy, dude. We are real estate mad. I mean, that's our national pastime.
Yeah. But it's going to be okay.
No.
It's going to be okay.
It's not. I really don't see how it's going to be okay.
It's going to be okay.
Speaking of real estate, what do you guys think about this whole Chinese real estate situation? That whole thing seems like it's
a bit bad.
Imploding. Like really imploding.
Yeah, it's bad. But the thing with Chinese is I feel like Chinese on average don't engage in real estate speculation quite as much as the average American does. Like
they just dump
flipping houses is not a thing that they do.
Yeah,
and
not,
I don't think
that's right. They're not really flipping. They're
They're buying and holding.
They're saving in the form of real estate.
Yeah.
Right.
At a multi-generational timescale.
The problem is
you're hodlers.
The problem is the demographic. Like you, with a shrinking population, it's hard to get too excited about real estate on a structural level, right?
They should, but the government doesn't want them to be realist. That's the thing.
Right. Their economic planning.
The
real estate market.
Exactly. They don't want a real estate bubble.
But
Americans can only see a real estate downturn as a negative because we live for the bubble. We love the bubble.
Yes.
We are the bubble.
The irony is somewhat ironic that it's the Chinese government that is being like the most obstinate about finances here, right? And almost like the more classical hard money German Austrian way.
That's not surprising at all. They love Germans.
That's true.
They love Germans. They love the German economic model. They love German law.
They love that guy named Marx.
Yeah.
They love that shit.
They love that shit. That's true. But yeah,
they're very Germanic. Whereas, you know, we are all about just
vibes. Just vibes.
We're just all about fucking loans and
financial
like
chicanery.
Down, like money down, like no or little money down. We are all about the monthly cost. We're about the monthly bill, the payment. The
debt service.
We're all about getting approved and rolling. You know what I mean? Like, we just go, fucking go. And I don't understand how they think that we could get a soft landing when the mortgage rate hits 7.5%. Our entire cultural existence is running into a vertical brick wall. Do they not understand this? Do they know what the average American is doing out there? Do they understand what we're built upon?
Well, not just that.
Airbnb.
I mean, loans, auto loans are also up near 7, 8, 9%.
Yeah,
auto loans got to be crazy.
Because they're lower cost, lower duration.
But the difference with that is a $1,000, like even at that rate, Americans will still somehow find a way to make it work.
Yeah, they'll pay.
I don't care, man. I'll pay $1,100 car payment.
Unemployment's very low and wage growth is decent, right?
Yeah. I'm just saying, with the house thing, man, like, I don't think they realize how much of the economy is based around fucking HGTV house flipping. I don't think they get it, dude.
Hey, you know what? Maybe Home Depot is going to do well because nobody can move. You can only rent out.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Everyone will just re-dump all their money into it. It'll be like a COVID lockdown all over again. Yeah.
Dude, we do not have the healthcare infrastructure to handle people doing home improvement on themselves. Everyone's going to throw their fucking back out. They're going to staple their foot. They're going to run a nail right through their toe.
The weak will perish. And
yeah, people are going to have heart attacks.
Fine. The economy will be fine.
We don't have the healthcare infrastructure to become a DIY culture.
Healthcare is a drag on GDP. So.
Dude, they're going to stop the flow of migrant labor, and then they're going to raise the they're going to raise the interest rate. It's over next year.
Speaking of the migrant labor, like, is that still like a big thing? Like, people still coming, like, are still, you know, like seasonal labor or whatever. Like,
oh, it's huge, but they're trying to cut it off. They're really, you know, they really think that the appropriate thing here is to cut off the flow of workers into an economy that's being starved of workers.
And this is like from the Biden administration as well,
to fix inflation somehow.
Yeah. I'm telling you, man, I get the feeling that a lot of these policy decisions are wrong. But maybe they're less wrong than the other decisions they could make, but still wrong. Meaning they have only wrong choices to make at this point. But so maybe people can satisfy themselves thinking, well, it's less wrong than the other ones, but it's still wrong. And I get the feeling like next year we're going to realize, I don't have a good feeling about, like, the mortgage rate thing is just crazy, dude. I mean, Mike hit it right on the head, like, coming out the gate. Like, okay, the story here is the interest rate on the mortgage. And I'm like,
yeah,
that was, I don't know how we overcome that.
Well, I guess we'll see. I will admit I have been surprised that it hasn't bitten already.
Falling apart all at once.
Yeah, which on some level has made me kind of like reevaluate what my sort of structural view is on how this.
Well, because you're looking at prices, you're not looking at volumes.
Well, but I mean volume, yeah, but I just mean like generally to the economy, right? Like, it's not, I mean, yes, housing is a big part of it, but it also should have been business spending and business investment and auto loans and so on. And everything should have kind of coalesced towards a slowdown and therefore eventually a rise in unemployment and so on and so on. And that has not quite happened yet.
My
we've been waiting a long ass time for this recession.
My take on this is that this kind of this collapse, this is my doomer view. Little things collapse fast. Big things collapse. It takes time.
Right? Big things collapse suddenly.
Yes, but in a even in mid collapse, the collapse takes longer than a small thing because it's just bigger. There's more things to fall, and you're talking about larger bodies interacting with larger bodies, beams upon beams, right? Mm, like mm-hmm. boulders upon bigger boulders. The time scale at which this mega collapse occurs is slower fundamentally at a relativistic rate than small collapses. And I'm worried that the reason we're all sitting around going like, this doesn't really feel that bad is because it's so big that you don't even really,
you can't even see the part.
You're not seeing the real time thing. You're not seeing the real time picture. But if you were to go and compress the last year or 2 years and you look at some of these graphs where they do, you know, you can see on a timeline what's going on, pretty alarming.
Well, so think about this, right? The very, very first thing to collapse was all the crypto Ponzi stuff,
right?
Last year. Then the second biggest thing to collapse was what, the SVB, like the fucking VC Ponzi scheme,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
right.
VC is still
so like all of the all of the fringe shit has already started to collapse into fucking nothing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and
they don't get government support. That's one of the things.
Yeah, they don't get government support, right? So, and the stock market has been showing weakness all of last year. There's been something of a rally, but that could just be
that rally. That rally is entirely AI driven.
Yeah, this could be just a bear market rally or just some flash in the pan AI thing. But the point is,
I think it's
already starting to show weakness.
I think it's a lot of cash flowing around that doesn't know, people know where to put it. So
yeah, it's, you know. The point is it's showing weakness, right? Yeah. And right now the thing that everyone's staring at is commercial real estate.
Mm-hmm.
And it's already like transactions are already going on that are way under market.
Yeah.
Like -50%, -70% are the numbers that I've seen. Yep. So there's huge
defaults all
losses.
Over the place.
Yeah, there's huge losses being sustained in commercial real estate. There are huge losses probably being sustained in pseudo commercial like Airbnb real estate.
There's bad loans already.
Which is like sort of residential, sort of commercial real estate. But those haven't been forced to hit the market yet because people are still probably
remember there was a big
out of their pocket.
There was a recent downgrade, a Fitch downgrade of all the big banks.
Yeah.
Because their loan portfolios are starting to look bad.
It's all CRE, right? Mm-hmm. Like most of the regional and larger local banks. Or larger regional banks are all commercial real estate.
Yeah, I don't know if there was sector specific, but they have even the big banks.
Oh, like the big banks.
Yeah, like the Wells Fargos like of the world,
City Wells,
yeah,
okay.
Bank of America. Yeah. They got downgraded because their loan portfolios, and I don't know if it was sector specific or whatever. But they were saying like they're looking at 19 plus billion in bad loan write offs, right?
Jesus
and
Christ.
It's gonna, you know, that's just gonna grow.
Yeah.
So I think the picture you're painting is one where if you took all of that and sped it up, it would feel like a crisis, but it's just taking time.
Yeah. It's been about a year since all that shit began.
Yeah.
I remember like,
yeah.
When was FTX and Celsius and all that shit? That was like
around a year
ago. August of last year, right?
Yeah. FTX, yeah, I think it was
August
later,
of last year.
But yeah, it was around.
Yeah. August, September, like after summer, basically. Yeah. After like everyone partied all fucking summer last year and then. Or whenever it was, and then was that last year?
Yeah, it was.
Yeah,
wait,
yeah,
no. I don't know.
FTX was this year.
FTX was
this.
Yeah,
year,
it was like October of last year. I think the.
But like Luna and Celsius and all that
Luna,
fucking crazy.
Yeah, that was like.
That was around this time.
Luna
last
was like
year,
May
right?
of last year, I think. Luna was
okay.
a bit.
Yeah,
I think FTX
way.
Was like the final nail in the coffin.
Right. So, anyways, all the crypto shit started blowing up last year. So it's been about a year and change. And then, so yeah, point being is if you sped it all up, this would look like, if you compressed everything into, if it all happened in a few months.
Oh yeah, you'd be shitting your pants.
You would be shitting your pants.
Yeah. That's, yeah. And but, I think because the government and you know, there is a wide recognition that this is coming. This isn't like 08 where it kind of came out of the blue. I feel like, we know that this is happening.
Right? Yeah, like everybody.
Everybody knows. Like, who's not talking about the coming crash, right?
Yeah.
And because we know, there's so many defensive efforts being put up to keep, like, we're prepared. We have, like, defensive, you know, we have whatever fucking seawalls put up, right? We've got stuff to try and mitigate. And so we're slowing it down, but I don't think structurally it's not enough. It's not going to be enough to overcome the fundamental reality that your entire real estate market is going to hit the fucking brick wall.
I think this Christmas season, this holiday season, gift buying season is going to be very telling.
I don't even know do you think that matters? I mean, so families tap their YOLO on their credit cards. Does that mean
the only thing to compare it to is last year, right? During the same time.
No, but if everyone collectively decides to YOLO on their credit cards, does that make things better?
Well, so we'll be able to see in the credit card numbers if that's what they did.
Well, let's say there's retail does really well. It has a pretty good holiday season, but at the, you know,
credit card like 1.2 trillion.
Yeah, it goes to like 1.3 trillion.
Yeah.
You know, like, is that, then it would be, are we concerning. Good? I don't think we're good.
No, exactly. Yeah. That would not be good. That would be, okay, this is definitely still coming.
Yeah.
You know,
that's the other thing, but is like American consumers are just way more rabid than I ever thought possible. Like, this is really exposing to me.
Americans love to spend.
They love to, and they do not fear debt. It's weird. They have no fear of debt. And I don't know whether it's because we're just risk comfy or whether we just don't understand debt.
it's both. I mean, dude, I mean, if you go to like one of the only brick and mortars left, Best Buy, dude, it's fucking amazing how much shit people buy still. People love to buy electronics and all sorts of shit on debt.
Yeah, they just keep going, crazy. Man. You know, they keep going until one day they run out. They're going
to
run out of money because that's what the fucking is doing. I mean, because the only real source of additional wealth going on creation was real estate appreciation, as far as I can tell. I mean, there hasn't really been real wage growth. I guess there has been some on the bottom end, but not enough to get not to catch up with inflation, though. I mean, real wages are probably down.
I don't know cumulatively since COVID. It should be up.
I've heard it's down.
Recently, it should. It was down when inflation was extremely high, but inflation's come down now. And real wage growth is still running at decent clip.
But does that explain, you know, consumer confidence? Because you're making – because this is all – remember, this is all coming on like the sort of like lower end of the wage scale.
Yeah.
Do you really think like an additional 3% on a low – on an already low wage is going to make them spend a lot more? I don't know. Man. I think a lot of those people save. I feel like they're savers.
At the bottom end, it's just like hand to mouth. It's basically hand to mouth.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know, man. Over here in my neighborhood, every Friday, the Western Union is fucking packed. These guys are hoarding cash and sending it back home.
Western Union? Is that payday loan?
No. They're wiring money back home to whatever country.
You might be in a weird microcosm then. But like,
you mean a place that has Latino foreign workers?
Yeah.
Is that weird microcosm? Or is that all of the United States?
Maybe, but like, I'm just saying the aggregate numbers, like at the bottom end, the propensity to spend is much greater.
You think so?
That is spending.
At the top end of
the... If you're remitting money to Mexico, you're spending it.
Well, you are, but what I'm saying is that
doesn't count as, like, domestic spending.
Consumer spending, yeah. I'm saying that I don't... Like, I just get a hard time thinking that at the low end, if you give someone 3% or 4% wage increase, that's going to immediately
Yeah, but it's not a 3% increase, right? Like, most people are not getting a wage increase, but a huge number of them are, and it's translating into a 3% average.
Yeah.
Okay, but I still... On the low end, my feeling is people on the lower end of the spectrum, they will save money when they can. I think it's more the sort of like middle and upper income areas where people are profligate spenders because they have access to credit. That's my feeling. It's like this leverage.
Everybody's got access to credit in the States. So.
Yeah, but if they're being forced into spending more money.
A lot of people don't have credit cards, dude.
If the lower end is being forced into spending money through inflation, they're going to have to do it no matter what.
Yeah. I mean, there's a bit of that. It's the upper end where they got so much surplus cash that they just buy S&P or whatever, right? Like that's a form of saving, right?
I feel like that's
buying stocks is not like a bottom 10%
income ladder. Exactly. Thing,
right. Yeah. So they just spend it on, they'll buy like more food or something, or they'll buy like a cell phone, whatever.
I just think shutting off the mortgage conveyor belt is exactly what happened in fucking 2008. So I don't think, I don't know why people are comfortable with this happening again, except this time we're inducing it. And like, I don't know if, to me, that's like shutting off the fucking Gulf Stream to Europe. You know what I mean? Like this is the thing that powers fucking everything. It's the largest asset class in the entire world is U.S. real estate. So, like, I don't know, man. Like, this does not seem like a trivial data point that, you know, what's going on in American real estate. The fact that the residential real estate market has essentially shut down and commercial real estate, or at least office spaces, are underwater. Totally fucking underwater. Like, yeah. Titanic's it's underwater.
It's totally ugly.
Totally. And that's just office space. I don't think that retail space looks healthy at all. I mean, you just got to go look, you know, at any... I mean, I'm sure you see it in L.A. Like...
Yeah, just go look around.
Empty storefronts. Fuck empty. Everywhere.
Yeah, half the shit's empty.
Yeah.
Where is it?
You know? So... And everyone's talking about SF downtown. I'm like, do you know how many suburban office parks there are? That are just fucking empty. They all have lease signs up everywhere you look.
Yeah, and those aren't as obvious because you can't really tell driving by that nobody's in these like generic looking low rise.
Yeah,
office
but they never have cars parked in front. There's no names on the empty. Building or the marquee sign. There's no names.
They just look like concrete and glass, like empty boxes, basically.
Yeah, and you'll see a for lease sign on it or office space available. It's everywhere, man.
Yeah, they definitely overbuilt that stuff.
Yeah,
in the 90s and 2000s. So I think that reckoning is coming in now because they just built way too much of that shit.
I think next,
Phoenix, Arizona, is like 80% that. You know what I mean? It's just like shitty suburban office complexes and overpriced bubble houses.
I'll tell you how to drive. Here's how you do it. If I was managing the economy. Raise the rates on daytime electrical usage by 5 to 6 times. Okay.
Where are you going with this?
Drop it for office towers. Because we're global warming, you're going to drive people back to the office just for the AC. That's how you do it. You got to be underhanded about it. See, I could run this country.
Deeply, deeply underhanded.
Yeah. Just make AC unsustainable for Americans. And they will go back to the office just for the AC.
That is deeply underhanded.
Yeah.
I wouldn't put it past California to try that.
Yep.
That aligns with everything California is trying to do. Tax the shit out of business tax the shit out of energy and try to keep businesses from leaving.
That's why, dude, I feel like the future is asset light because they are going to, as business activity falls, they're going to start taxing the shit out of everything that
they
can.
Yes. Shit you can't move.
They're going to start cannibalizing.
Yes.
Just to make the numbers work to keep the state running and society from falling apart.
That is the Toronto or Canada, I can't remember, the vacant home tax.
Yeah.
Right.
And they and when that happens, you could see the political tide turning where being a landlord, you're on the wrong side of politics.
You're on the wrong side of this. Yeah, you're right? Deeply on the wrong side of this.
And so I do fear that the cities are going to basically cannibalize the real estate owning class.
Yeah, because just that's to survive. The thing that the real estate literally cannot leave.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
They're going to, we're going to turn into late stage Soviet Union because these motherfuckers are going to default and just be like, government is just going to take over swaths of real estate due to tax liens.
Speaking of asset scary. Light, like because we moved my family, right? selling shit, getting rid of shit, it was such a, it was a mess when we were trying to do it, because we were trying to do it on like a 2-week time scale and stuff, right? We couldn't get rid of everything.
Yeah.
But now looking,
like your personal belongings?
Yeah, like we sold a bunch of furniture, I sold a car, yeah, you know, all this shit, right? Looking back on it, like it feels so good to have gotten rid of shit. So good. I still got a lot of stuff like this packed up in my mom's basement, right? Like back to the stuff, like, because we had such a short time scale, like you couldn't even like sell it in time, right? Unless you just want to like dump it for like $50, dump like, you know, like a $2,000 table for $50 or something like that, right?
Yeah.
But it just feels, yeah, you know what? Go asset light, own as few things as possible, just the essentials.
Mm-hmm.
It feels good. It feels so much like easier. Yep. Easier.
Especially with 5.3% on,
yeah,
the 1-year treasury, like, dude.
Very few assets, except yeah, for treasuries. Just a lot, yeah, of T-bills.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of T-bills, man. You know, you, I mean, the government is literally just begging to give you money, right? They're just, yeah, like,
so that's actually my plan. If I can't get this new business off the ground by the end of 2024, I am going to sell everything I own.
Nice.
And just go retire in Southeast Asia somewhere.
Hell yeah.
I'm just done.
Like, yes. You know, dude, probably have all you motherfuckers are going to end up in Asia, and I'm here for it, because I told you I'm much more likely to hang out with you guys in Asia than in your fucking respective North American cities. Yeah. And I fully intend on going out there myself.
I think I could raise a nice little chunk of change by just liquidating, yeah, my entire life.
Dude, it's, yeah, and it's better living out there. Have you seen their mangoes? I mean, fuck. Like, dude, they're laughing at us. Have you seen their seafood?
I think I could pay for my entire life in Southeast Asia just on T-bills.
You organize your
tax situation well. Oh, you're American, yeah, so you got to pay taxes anyway on it, right?
I got to, yeah, but as long as I don't make money where I live, it's super simple.
Yeah.
Because I just pay U.S. taxes. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
The hard
and
part...
It just comes in the consolidated statement from my broker at the end of the year.
The hardest part for you, if you're to do that, is just to not become degenerate.
Yeah.
That's
the hardest part,
because there's so much opportunity to become a degenerate in Southeast Asia.
Yeah. So my only real vice is drinking, and I can no longer drink because I'm like that. There's a hard limit.
So you don't think you're going to replace that with another vice? You have your vice slot.
The obvious vice is becoming a fucking sex pet.
Yeah, probably.
That's the obvious vice. Every time I hear, every time I hear some single guys like, "Hey, I'm going on vacation to the Philippines," I'm like, "Yeah, you're a sex petting. Why else? Like, unless you're taking your whole family there and you're Filipino, like,
yeah,
you know what I mean? Like, yeah, come on, yeah, man. You know what I mean?
I'm going to
Colombia by myself. I'm like,
I don't think I could.
You really want to see Cartagena that bad?
I don't think I could live that life without tons of booze, though. If I'm sober, it's just going to be me like keeping busy doing some kind of work and then. Yeah. Just
if you're gonna if you can get that basically arranged nicely, and I don't know, maybe like surfing or some shit.
Yeah,
that's what Carl does. He fucking got married and surfs. That's what he does.
I'll pick something.
Yeah,
but remember, this is if I can't make it work by the end of next year. So I have 19 or 14 months to make it happen.
Well, you're 15. In the right. If you can't make this happen, nobody's making shit happen, because that seems
exactly
to be like you're in the middle of the only thing that's going.
If I can't form another company and be successful again in this market, then, or in this particular
space
industry, yeah,
in this time
space,
mm-hmm,
in this time, then I can't, then I should just hang it up.
Mm. Well, that's not a bad outcome either.
Yeah, sure. I'm fine with either one. That's the trick.
Just consult us on where you want to go, because we're going to want to come visit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it'll be, I'm itching to go to Malaysia. I want to see. I want to go check out Malaysia, man. I feel like it's a good scene out there.
Well, I'm definitely going to do a tour of the entire region before I make any decisions.
I feel like Malaysia is very good for, one, Chinese people, and two, English speakers.
Yeah, it's a good balance.
That's a good thing. Yes. It's a very good place for Chinese Americans.
Kuala Lumpur is actually like pretty modern.
Yes.
Right? So,
and Penang is a beautiful place. I mean,
Kuala Lumpur has a lot of Western companies that set up shop there for natural resources and other industries.
Like
and they've got very modern like shopping malls and condos and stuff that that are pretty cheap.
Yeah. Oh, and they're building all sorts of real estate for expats.
Yeah.
Like Chinese expats.
It is relatively affordable. Like,
yeah.
Dude, I stayed.
A million USD buys you out there.
Yeah. It's like
not to say that that's how much you need to spend, but I'm just saying like that's very high end for, you know.
Yeah, I think it's not cheap, but it's high value.
You get a lot for your money.
Yeah, you got a lot for your money. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like I look at a million dollar place, I'm like, I don't need that much place.
Yeah.
I was out there on vacation once, and we just stumbled upon like the place it was some hotel or something, and they fucked up the reservation. So like we didn't get the room we wanted. So we just like walked around and we found a place.
Where was this?
That Kuala Lumpur.
Oh, okay.
So we just walked into like another hotel, and we rented for 5 nights this crazy rooftop penthouse suite for like $200 a night.
Wow.
It was fucking crazy. Wow. Yeah. So we're like, well, I guess that worked out.
Beautiful. Yeah. And I think culturally it's a good fit. I've been like hanging out with some Malaysians and I'm like, I like the vibe. You know?
Mm. Yeah, it's a cool place.
Yeah.
For sure. And it's right next to Singapore also.
Yeah.
Boring. Yep. Singapore is boring. But
it is quite boring.
Hong Kong is very exciting, I would say.
That's the feeling I got.
It's an exciting place.
But at the same time, I think while I do think that Hong Kong is much more interesting and exciting than Singapore. A lot of people, like I have some sort of like mainland friends who live there, and they say oftentimes the best part of living in Hong Kong is that you can go to Shenzhen on the weekend.
What's so good about Shenzhen? I don't get it. What is so good about that place? I find it so boring.
It is. I could see it being more boring, drinking. But like, yeah. Look.
That bar we went to was, okay, that one bar, that area that we went to that night.
That was pretty cool.
That's fine, but you can find that all over China.
You can find that all over China. But I think it's also part of it. I think is like the cost differential is so high that for like the price of a nice dinner in Hong Kong, you could probably like have 5 nice dinners in Shenzhen. And I think the selection and quality of food is probably better in Shenzhen than it is in Hong Kong.
Mm, okay.
So let's find out next summer.
Yeah. I like the low rent stuff, man. You know, like I like those little diners that do the milk tea diners and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I don't care about the fancy shit.
I don't like.
Wait, do you need a visa to go into China from Hong Kong as an American, right?
As an American, you will definitely need a visa.
Okay. Yeah.
Does the standard PRC visa get you into Hong Kong or you need a separate HK visa?
I don't need it as a Canadian.
Mm.
I don't think we need visas to go to HK.
Americans don't need it.
Probably do not.
We don't need it.
Probably.
But to get into China, you do. So you would either have to go to the embassy here or in Hong Kong.
Well, they re-verified those 10-year visas, right?
Yeah.
They revalidated them.
So that's what I'm going on. So.
Okay.
Because I have a 10-year.
I have a 10-year.
I think I have a. I think I had a 5-year that expired.
Okay. They're not hard to get. They're not hard to get.
Yeah, you just have to wait in line for fucking hour. Sucks.
Not New York, man. In New York, it's like there's no line.
That was a quick. Yeah, it's fucking. There's a line out here, okay. Or at least there was last time I went.
Yeah. All right. Should we call it there?
Three hours of bullshit.
I'm putting it all out as one block.
Whoa!
Wow.
I'm just gonna be like three. It's just gonna title it 3 hours of bullshit.
3 hours of bullshit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I needed it, man. I'm telling you. I just.
There's about 50% accuracy in the things that we said.
No,
if we can get to 50, that's pretty good.
All vibes, no
good.
Facts.
50% is good. Yeah, just vibes. No research was done
half
at any
facts,
point.
Full vibes.
During this conversation.
We did dispense financial advice.
Which may or may not be.
This is financial advice.
This is financial advice, and you should listen to every word. Yes.
Just a reminder, folks, we only give financial advice on this podcast, and you should absolutely do what
you
we say.
Absolutely.
And we will take full liability for losses and gains.
Yeah.
All right.
Past performance guarantees future results. Right,
yeah, we're being sarcastic, motherfuckers. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. All right.
You guys.
Good talk, gents. All right.
Yeah.
Hold on.
Have a good one.
Bye-bye.